Welcome to Stepping Off Now, a podcast about how to live your creative best life. If you're feeling creatively stuck, burned out, or like you're not fulfilling your true creative potential, this podcast is for you. I'm Kendra, a social scientist and writer. I spent decades feeling creatively unfulfilled while I pursued conventional life goals, culminating in severe burnout that took years to recover from. This podcast chronicles my journey in real time as I find my way home to my essential creative self and seek to live my own creative best life. I discuss topics like harnessing the intuitive creative process, using creativity to manage mental health, and sorting through all the external pressures and expectations to figure out what you really want. My hope is that you'll find inspiration and solace here. You are not alone, and you are stronger and wiser than you know. You can find out more by visiting my website, kendrapatterson.com. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Stepping Off Now podcast. I'm Kendra. You may have noticed last week I did not issue an episode. It was one of those weeks where everything kind of piles up. And as you probably know by now, my coping skill that I've developed over the last few years is to decide to not do things when I'm feeling overwhelmed like that. Instead of the more standard approach that we tend to use, which is figuring out how to be more productive and more efficient so that we can get all the things done. I'm of the belief that choosing to do fewer things is really the sustainable answer here when we're feeling stressed and busy. And sometimes that means making what seem to be kind of difficult choices about what not to spend our time on. And for me last week, that was my podcast. Usually my podcast does get priority, but sometimes on rare occasions it does not. However, I'm back in form this week, and I want to welcome my newest patron, Jill. Thank you so much for signing up. Jill signed up to my $5 tier, which includes two bonus episodes a month, usually two. One is a research-based episode where I pick a topic and really do a deep dive. Last month, I did a research episode on Van Gogh and examined the question, why are we all so fascinated with Van Gogh? He's one of the most famous fine arts painters from the last century and a half. He was one of the painters who kind of ushered us into the modern era of painting. Why is he one of the biggies, considering he only actually painted for about 10 years and didn't even start painting until his late 20s? And his art is kind of odd when you look at it. It definitely has its own style. And if you didn't know any better, you might look at some of his art and think, I don't know, is that good? Anyway, that's what I took a look at in my Patreon bonus episode last month at the $5 tier for that research episode. And I also include a behind-the-scenes personal update episode every month where I report on how my non-podcast related creative projects are doing. And recently, that's been mainly my novel, because I've been working very hard on finalizing draft number 9. So I just recorded an update episode on that I'll be releasing to all my $5 tier patrons in a couple days. And today's episode topic comes out of something that I briefly touched on in that episode, and I thought it was worthy of expanding on today. I also would like to mention that I have a $3 tier as well on my Patreon. That does not include any bonus materials if you would like to support my work but aren't really interested in getting that bonus stuff. Thank you to all my patrons and everyone who supports me in other ways, like sending me emails with your thoughts, and listening to this podcast, recommending it to people you think might be interested in it, and writing reviews and rating me. So today I'm going to talk about creative risk. This is a subject that I don't believe I have ever t- touched on in this podcast. A lot of subjects I return to over and over again because there always seems to be more to say about them. But weirdly enough, it has never occurred to me to do a dedicated issue on, or a dedicated episode rather, on creative risk. This might be because deciding to pursue your creativity, your creative projects, live the creative life, develop a dedicated creative practice, all of that is inherently risky in a lot of different ways and complex ways. And so risk is kind of just always there when you're living the creative life and pursuing your creative urges. But as I was recording my Patreon update episode, I recalled an incident I had some years ago now when I was still writing short stories and trying to submit them, where I got some personalized feedback from the editors of an anthology. I had sent in a short story called The Trash House, which was originally a novel I had written, my very first novel. It's called The Trash House, and I eventually turned it into a rather long short story. I mean, not super long. We're talking less than 5,000 words. But I sent that into this anthology that was looking for kind of like speculative stuff, and it's a bit speculative in nature and has to do with a Japanese fairy tale that I work into the storyline. And the feedback I received was that they really liked it, but I missed out on being chosen for the anthology. And they were sorry about that, but they hoped that I would continue to take risks with my work. And other than being really disappointed that I wasn't chosen, but also excited that I had almost been chosen, that's a pretty big deal to get some personalized feedback. I didn't understand what they meant by they wanted me to continue to take risks, and I believe also they said take more risks. What does that even mean? I thought perhaps they were referring to subject matter. So, like, my Japanese fairy tale wasn't risky enough. Maybe I needed to go with Japanese horror or something like that. And for a long time, that's just kind of how I saw creative risk, having to do with the subject matter that I chose to write about. And I wasn't entirely wrong, but that's only one small piece of the picture. And I now have an entirely different perspective on what creative risk is. I'm going to talk about three different kinds here today and what they all share in common and what the solution is to taking those risks. Because it's not enough to just say, oh, you have to take creative risks. And if you Google creative risk, or what is creative risk, or how do you take creative risk, you'll come across a lot of resources that are basically telling you why you should take creative risks, but they're not really telling you what creative risk is and how to take creative risks. That information is lacking, so I thought I would try to fill in some of those gaps today. So I want to start with a question for y'all. Are you playing it safe in the creative realm, with your creative projects, with what they're comprised of, with the type of life you're living, whether or not it's conducive to exploring and expressing yourself creatively? Are you playing it safe? This is a difficult question to answer because anytime we sit down to do creative work, we are taking a risk and we know it. We can feel it because it's scary. Sure, creativity can be very fulfilling. And if we're just sitting down to do like some light crafting, that's a type of creativity that's maybe not highly risky and not very stressful. But if we're sitting down to pursue our creative dreams, heck yes, that involves risk. We know it. We can feel it. We feel anxious. So it's easy to think that we're not playing it safe, but we probably still are. And this is what happened to me for decades of my creative life, is that even though I felt like I was taking risks, I was still playing it safe. And the reason is because I had a safety mechanism built into my confrontation with failure. And that's really what risk is about, right? It's about this fear that we might fail. And to really take creative risk in a way that is going to allow you to tap into your true creative potential, you have to confront the inevitability of failure, not just the possibility, but the inevitability. Why do I say that? Because if you're only confronting the possibility of failure, at least this was certainly the case for myself, You're going to play it safe because you want to avoid that failure. It's going to feel like you're taking risks. It's going to feel like you're exploring your creativity fully. But all the while, you're going to be in small and large ways avoiding things that feel like they're going to lead to directly to failure. And I'm going to talk about exactly what this looks like and what I mean in this episode in a moment. So truly taking risks in terms of your creative work, your creative life, means not only considering the possibility of failure, but embracing it, seeking it. And that's really, really scary, especially if you are involved in projects that are large, that take a long time, or that you're investing a lot of effort, possibly money, maybe not directly money, but maybe you're, like I have done, sacrificed income and career for the sake of pursuing the creative life. It can be enormously scary to do that with the knowledge of inevitable failure. Now, does that mean that failure will occur? Yes and no. The point I'm trying to make here is that we have to embrace the fact that we will fail in some way. Might be small ways, might be large ways, but we have to really step into that. And that goes against everything we have been taught about hedging our bets and playing it safe and being smart about things. Oftentimes, taking creative risks means doing things in ways that don't seem all that smart. All of this is tremendously difficult to do, but that's the only way to really step fully into taking creative risks that will ultimately result in rewards for you. Now, the second part of this is understanding what is meant by rewards. I don't mean rewards in terms of success, money, fame, all the things that we tend to see as the goals of our lives. And maybe esteem is a better word to use than fame in this case, because certainly most of us are not seeking fame, but we're seeking esteem. Those are the rewards that we may fail to attain. But inevitably, and it's guaranteed that if we embrace failure and step into taking risks, we will be rewarded personally through our creative and personal growth as we pursue our creative dreams and pursue the creative life. So if you can shift your mindset a little bit to understanding that the inevitability, embracing the inevitability of failure, doesn't mean you won't be rewarded. It just means that you're going to have to learn how to, number one, enjoy the process of creativity rather than doing it for the rewards you hope to reap at the end of it, as the end game. And two, shift your understanding of what rewards are to that personal growth, that transformation that is the ultimate goal of creativity in the creative life. And I want to stress, this doesn't mean that other rewards won't come. They may not. So a big part of this is that detachment from outcome that I spend a lot of time talking about in various ways. So let me ask you that question again. Are you still playing it safe in your creative life with your creative projects? Is your fear of failure keeping you from taking risks because in small and possibly large ways, as you do your creative work, as you live your creative life, you're hedging your bets. You're trying to be quote unquote smart about things. You're trying to, I don't know, be likable. You're trying to balance things. I had an episode where I talked about why I don't seek balance because I don't think it's conducive to truly developing your creative potential in life. Oftentimes, creativity and the creative life require us to do things in an almost opposite way to what we've been taught is the right way. And we're not always aware of these things. We're not always aware that we're playing it safe. That was my problem for years and years and years. Now, how did I develop a capacity to take risk? To some extent, this just is something that gets easier with time as you take more and more risks. But what does that mean? What does that look like? What does taking risks look like? Because it's one thing to understand, oh, well, I have to embrace the inevitability of failure. I have to step out of my comfort zone, like really step out of it. But what does that actually look like as a practice in your own life. I'm going to talk about three different ways that this can occur in terms of doing art and taking risks with it. The first is type of art. The second is subject matter. And the third one is revision. And by revision, I mean the process that you go through with any given piece of art where you refine it over time, either rewriting or redoing, rethinking, etc., so that you can create a work that fulfills your vision and your potential. So let's start with type of art. Now, remember how I said that a lot of times the creative life and creative work require us to go against what we've been taught is the right way to do things. What this looks like in terms of type of art is that the art you should be doing may not be the one you're really good at. We're told that we should play to our strengths, that we should focus on what we feel we're good at, or what other people say we're good at. But remember, the purpose of creativity is that transformation of the self, that growth over time. Regardless of whatever other kinds of goals you have for yourself in terms of your art, that's the fundamental goal of it. And that's why many of us enjoy creativity, because it does give us that feeling of potential being fulfilled, of that growth, of that excitement and enthusiasm about life that is based in the potential for transformation and venturing into the unknown. It makes us feel alive, in other words. You're not going to get that feeling and you're not going to fulfill your potential if you're focusing simply on what you happen to be best at. Now, it could be that that's the thing you should be doing if there's potential for growth. For example, I could say, well, the thing I'm best at is writing. So does this mean that maybe I should be doing fine arts painting instead? No, that's not what I'm talking about here. So let me give you an example from my own life. I'm better at writing short stories than I am novels. That's not to say that I'm a brilliant short story writer, but a lot of the ways that I write, like the style of my writing, is more conducive to short stories than novels. And I've had people tell me that they like my short stories and maybe that's what I should be focusing on, but I just really want to write novels, always have. I don't read short stories myself, and that's a really important sign if you're not consuming the art form yourself. I just don't enjoy short stories. I really like the long form of novels. Novels are really, really hard for me. And to tell you the truth, I'm beginning to understand that I kind of suck at them, but I'm learning. And that's the risk, is that I've chosen to put all my eggs in this one basket of writing novels, and I may never get one ever published. Deciding to write short stories because, oh, well, I'm better at that. And people have already told me they really like my short stories and they're easier for me to write and they're easier to put out into the world and et cetera, et cetera. That would be playing it safe. So this is a case where taking a risk involves pursuing what I feel good about, what I'm enthusiastic about, rather than what I'm good at and have received more support for. Taking this kind of risk really involves knowing yourself well, and it's okay to experiment. I mean, I did write short stories for a long time, and I have a lot of short stories that I'm extremely proud of and would love to put out into the world someday as well. But I know my own heart, and novels are always going to be where it's at for me, even if nobody reads novels anymore. I'm still going to want to write them. Pursuing something over time that I'm not particularly good at, and that, you know, I often feel I will inevitably fail at, is the way to transform. And what I've discovered after finishing draft 9 of my novel, and no, that is not the last draft, is that, hey, I'm getting better at this. I'm developing more of an intuitive sense of how to write a novel, which essentially involves plot. Plot is the part that I suck at. I'm developing an intuitive sense for it, and maybe I don't suck so bad at this anymore. That's transformation. That's growth. That comes from taking risk. So think about that in terms of your own art. Are you playing it safe by only focusing on the parts that you know you're good at? And what would happen if instead you focused on parts that you kind of feel you suck at, what you secretly really want to do. So that's how to take risk with the type of art you're doing. Well, let's tackle subject matter. This is the one that I said earlier is often what people think of when they think about taking risks. I'm, of course, going to be talking about this primarily in terms of a writing perspective, but I'm sure that this applies to other realms. Writers are often told that we need to write what we know. And this can be pretty confusing because as writers, kind of like what we do is imagine scenarios that may or may not be directly related to our lives. But I've always interpreted this write what you know to be talking about how the best subjects for us as writers to explore, that is to say that the ones that we're going to be able to explore with the most depth, the most emotion, are the ones that are closest to our hearts. But those are often the very subjects that we wish to avoid because they're all wrapped up in complex feelings of shame or anger, these quote-unquote bad feelings that we wish to avoid as human beings because they don't feel good. This is really problematic when it comes to creativity because the stuff that is going to allow us to fulfill our potential is that stuff that's wrapped up in those emotions. Now, oftentimes, what writers will do is they'll kind of dance around those subjects. So that kind of stuff is always going to come out in our writing. It's always going to be there, but we might deal with it in a periphery character, for example, rather than the main character. Let me think of an example here. This could have to do with like maybe traumas that we experienced or that we perpetrated. They could have to do with habits we have that we're ashamed of, addictions. We'll often notice that that kind of stuff comes out in our writing and we think, oh, I'm writing, you know, I'm taking a risk because I'm including it. But usually we're still playing it safe. Like I said, it might be a periphery character that expresses that quality, that personality trait. Or it might be something that our main character is dealing with, but not in a direct and visceral way. In other words, we aren't shining the spotlight directly on those subject matters. Why? Because it's painful to do that. It's painful to confront those things in ourselves. And, you know, creatives usually are pretty good at living with a little bit of discomfort, at least. And they're often self-reflective and self-critical. So we tend to think, well, I am looking at that stuff. It's in the novel. I wrote about it. But if we aren't feeling that extreme discomfort that comes from direct confrontation with what we see as our own worst memories, our worst traits, or whatever it is, we haven't truly taken that risk. And that's a very difficult thing to do. But again, I really need to stress that this is what creativity is ultimately for, that personal transformation. The creative life isn't about necessarily producing creative works so much as it is learning how to live your best life as the fullest, most wholehearted version of yourself. And that can't happen unless we eviscerate ourselves to some extent. It's like a type of therapy. This is what I'm always saying, that creativity, the creative life, creative practice is really a way of managing mental health. And one of the reasons it's good for that is because it does force us, if we're truly stepping into our creativity and taking those risks, it forces us to confront the things about ourselves that we're repressing that are painful to confront, but will ultimately lead to great joy when we do and when we work through them. And we can work through them by putting them into our art. Now, one of the things as a novelist that I get the cold sweats over is people who know me are going to read this. So I don't want to be truthful, because I don't want people to like know these things about me. Well, here's what happens as you continue to write and refine your work over time. You realize that you go through this period where you're getting closer and closer to the truth of yourself and shining that spotlight, but then you kind of pass over that and go back into this realm of story where you realize you're not writing about yourself anymore. You're writing about the characters of your novel. And so it's not at all autobiographical. if that makes sense. So your characters become so of themselves that you realize that, oh, I'm actually not writing about myself at all. So for example, neither one of my characters, Mara or Esme, are me. Neither one of them have lives that are like mine or do things that I do. Their experiences with difficulties are not at all my own because I went into that darkness, I confronted all that stuff, and I came out the other side and realized that, oh, yep, I'm still a novelist and I'm still writing a story that I made up. So I would encourage you to really understand it in that way, that you are writing your own truth, but ultimately your finished product isn't going to be you. It's not going to be autobiographical, not in any way, unless you're writing a memoir. Totally different. I have no idea about memoirs. That's not my thing. So there's no need to be embarrassed. And also, I think by the time you've confronted those things about yourself, you reach a point of equanimity because you work through all the shame and other difficult feelings. And you increasingly feel ready to share that with the world, if that makes sense. So it feels very scary while you're doing it, but the end result is a working through of that fear. But you can only reach that point if you do take that risk and you do a deep dive. Now, how do you do that? Because a lot of times it's impossible, right? When I wrote my first draft of my novel, like I said, that stuff was kind of sort of there, but it was on the periphery and I thought that's how I wanted it. Well, you do it through that process of revision and refining things over time. And that's the third way that we can take a risk, a creative risk, is by diving into that revisions process. Now, why is this a risk? Why does this involve risk? Because the revisions process is not necessarily linear. This is something that I've discovered recently in my own revisions of my novel. We have this idea that the revisions process should be an up and to the right experience, like on a graph. So there should be a feeling of progress. Well, a lot of times revisions can feel like they're taking us back to the beginning and that we've lost ground. And this feels like failure. It feels like it will inevitably lead to failure. This, in my opinion, is a good thing because sometimes we really do need to tear things down in order to rebuild them in a better way. And I feel that to some extent that's what I've done with these last couple revisions of my novel that I embarked on last summer after I got some challenging feedback from an agent editor that I had hired to look at my first couple chapters. As painful as it was, I really had to re-examine everything in my novel and kind of redo it. And I often felt like I didn't have a feeling that I was making it better. I felt really frustrated and depressed. I'd already worked on it for years. I'd already been through 7 drafts. I mean, how many more drafts am I going to have to do? You know, I felt like I was moving backwards. And because it required me to really take a look at my style of writing and try to consciously develop that, I really felt like, you know, I was tearing down my own artistic ability in a way. It was a really strange and disorienting experience, and it did not feel good at all. I really felt like maybe I'm making my novel worse. And I still don't know, even now that I've finished, you know, draft 8 and 9, which involved kind of tearing the novel apart, which was draft 8, and then putting it back together again, which was draft 9. I don't know if I made it better. But here's the thing. I feel really, really good about how much I've learned doing that process about how to write a novel. And I'm deeply excited about the changes that I've made that have included a deepening of the themes, of the characterization, of tightening the ties that bind Esme and Mara, the two main characters, and creating what I hope is an actual plot. Fingers crossed. So the revisions process can involve a feeling of risk because it can actually feel like we're moving backwards at times. And it is a risk because when we have something that we think is okay or pretty good, why risk tearing it apart and revising it or redoing it yet again, possibly making it worse when what we have is already okay? Well, I mean, that's a personal decision that you have to make. Maybe what you have is good enough and you're happy with that, and that's completely fine. But if you have that nagging feeling inside yourself that you're just not done, it's not good enough, it has not accomplished your vision, even if you don't have a super clear vision, like I'm not one of those people who does, but I have a feeling for what I want for my novel, and it's not there yet. It wasn't there yet. I am way closer now than I was 6 months ago. And that's my reward. That's the reward of taking this kind of risk, is that you'll emerge from it feeling like ultimately you have made progress, even if the process of getting there felt like you were moving backwards. And again, that's that growth. That's that transformation. That's why we do creative work. That's why I write novels, because it's my chosen creative dream. It always has been, and I want to get it right. And that feels really, really good. I would like to add a final thought on taking creative risk. Like all things having to do with creativity, I view this as process and as part of the creative process, not really as discrete instances of taking risks. So I think that's an important distinction to make, that we tend to see risk-taking as you do this big thing that's a big risk, and that's the risk that you took. But really, the way that risk works in the creative process is that it unfolds over time and often comes through that revisions process or through trying yet again on your way to improvement and learning. So while it may seem overwhelming when you're looking at it from the perspective of, oh my gosh, like I'm playing it safe. How do I take risks? I don't know how to do it. Well, you don't really necessarily have to know how to do it. You just have to be patient while it unfolds over time and trust that it will happen for you if you're really serious about committing to your creativity and continuing to work on it with that eye towards personal transformation. Now, it may be that the kinds of risks you take are those big steps forward. And there may be times in life where that is the kind of risk that you take, but that is not superior to the slow-moving kind of building over time type of risk. And for those of us who are prone to those big leaps or big gestures, we might want to consider what a more process-oriented type of risk-taking looks like, because that can serve to enable us in the long term to actually go deeper and take more risk, because we're approaching it from that perspective of this is a growth over time thing, and that the rewards is the process, that really is the rewards over time. All right, that's it for this episode. Thanks so much for spending this time with me. I hope that you heard something today that inspired you or uplifted you. And please do share my podcast with anyone you think might find value in it, might like it, and might need to hear what I have to say. Also, please take a moment to rate and review me if that's something that you feel you have the spoons for. And as always, you can contact me through the contact link in my show notes if you have any questions or comments or insights of your own. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, a wonderful week, and I will see you back here next Friday.